And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West, the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is September the 8th. It is the 251st day of the year. 114 days remain till the year's over with. And we'll be starting 2022. Let's see how well we can mess that one up. The Rich Forrest has had another aneurysm. And he's being sent home for hospice. And hopefully he will overcome that. Well, on this day, in 617, the Battle of Huai, Li Yuan defeats the Sui Dynasty army, opening the path to his capture of the imperial capital of Chang'an and the eventual establishment of the Tang Dynasty. 1100, election of the anti-pope Theodoric, he was an anti-pope in 1100 and 1101. This rift, I guess you could say, began with Wibert of Ravenna in 1080, in opposition to the excesses of Pope Gregory VII in support of the Emperor Henry V, who was the Holy Roman Emperor. In 1198, Philip of Swabia, Prince of Hohenstaufen, crowned King of Germany, also known as King of the Romans. Because remember, the Visigoths had basically subjugated Rome. 1253, Pope Innocent IV canonizes Stanislaus of Southern Panau, killed by King Boleslaw II. 1264, the Statue of Kali is guaranteeing Jew safety and personal liberties and giving Batai Din jurisdiction over Jewish matters is promulgated by Boleslaw the Pious, Duke of Greater Poland. Yes, if you wrap yourself in religious garb, you can be considered pious. 1276, Pope John the 21st is chosen. 1331, Stefan Dusan declares himself King of Serbia. 1380, Battle of Kulikovo. Russian forces defeat a mixed army of Tartars and Mongols, stopping their advance. 1504, Michelangelo's statue of David is unveiled in Piazza della Signoria in Florence. 1514, Battle of Orsha. One of the biggest battles of the century, Lithuanians and Poles defeat the Russian army. 1522, Magellan, Elcano, circumnavigation. Victoria, the ship, arrives in Seville, technically completing the first circumnavigation of the globe. 1565, St. Augustine, Florida, is founded by Spanish Admiral and Florida's first governor, Pedro Menendez de Avias. 1565, the Knights of Malta lift the Ottoman siege of Malta that began on May 18th. The Knights of Malta is basically another version of the Knights Templar. 1655. Warsaw falls without resistance to a small force under the command of Charles X, Gustav of Sweden, during the deluge, making it the first time that city is captured by a foreign army. 1727, a bonfire during a puppet show in the village of Burwell in Cambridgeshire, England, kills 78. Many of them are children. Doesn't say what happened to the puppets. 1755, French and Indian War, Battle of Lake George. 1756, French and Indian Wars. The Katanning Expedition, also known as the Armstrong Expedition, was a raid during the French and Indian War that led to the destruction of the American Indian village of Katanning, but it served as a staging point for attacks by the Delaware warriors against colonists in the British province of Pennsylvania. It's commanded by Lieutenant Colonel John Armstrong, This raid went deep into hostile territories. The only major expedition carried out by Pennsylvania provincial troops during what was looked at as a brutal backcountry war. Early on the morning of September the 8th, 1756, they launched a surprise attack on the Indian village. Although it eventually became a worldwide conflict known as the Seven Years' War, the French and Indian War began on the Pennsylvania frontier as a struggle for control of the Ohio country. With the surrender of George Washington at Fort Necessity in 1754 and Braddock's defeat in 1755, the settlers of the Pennsylvania frontier were without professional military protection, and they scrambled to organize their own defense. Quite often, government fails. We got a situation like that right here, right now. 1761, marriage of King George III of the UK to Duchess Charlotte of Mecklenburg-Strelitz. 1775, the unsuccessful rising of the priests in Malta. Also known as the Maltese Rebellion and the September 1775 Rebellion. It was an uprising led by Maltese clergy against the Order of St. John, who had sovereignty over Malta. The Order of St. John was another Templar wannabe. Uprising took place September 8th, 1775, was suppressed by the order within a few hours. The rebels were then captured, and some were executed, some were exiled, some were imprisoned. That falls into the column of you can't win them all. 1781, American Revolutionary War. The Battle of Eutaw Springs in South Carolina. The war's last significant battle in the Southern theater ends in a narrow British tactical victory. It's a case of you win most of the battles, but you lose the war. 1793, French Revolutionary War, Battle of Hansuta. 1796, French Revolutionary Wars, Battle of Bassano. French forces defeat Austrian troops at Bassano del Grappa. 1810, the Tonquin set sail from New York Harbor with 33 employees of John Jacob Astor's newly created Pacific Fur Company. After 6 months' journey around the tip of South America, they arrive at the mouth of the Columbia River, and Astor's men established the first trading town of Astoria, Oregon. 1813, at the final stage of the Peninsula War, the British-Portuguese troops captured the town of Donostia, now San Sebastian, resulting in a rampage and eventual destruction of the town. 1831, William IV and Adelaide of Saxe-Meiningen crowned King and Queen of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland. 1831, November Uprising, the Battle of Warsaw effectively ends the Polish insurrection. 1860, the steamship P.S. Lady Elgin sinks in Lake Michigan with the loss of about 300 lives. 1862, the Millennium of Russia monument is unveiled in Novgorod. 1863, American Civil War. In the Second Battle of Sabine Pass, a small Confederate force thwarts a Union invasion of Texas. 1883, the Northern Pacific Railway was completed in a ceremony at Gold Creek, Montana. Former President Grant drove in the final golden spike in an event attended by rail and political luminaries. 1888, Isaac Perel's submarine is first tested. 1888 also, the Great Herding begins with thousands of sheep being herded from the Argentine outpost of Fortunconessa to Santa Cruz near the Strait of Magellan. 1888, in London, the body of Jack the Ripper's second victim, Annie Chapman, is found. They never determined who exactly was Jack the Ripper or actually how many victims he had. 1888 the then Prince of Wales. 1888, in England, the first six football league matches are played. 1892, the Pledge of Allegiance is first recited. In 1900, Galveston hurricane. Hurricane hits Galveston, Texas, killed over 8,000 people. 1905, 7.2 Calabria earthquake shakes southern Italy with a maximum Mercalli intensity of 11, which is considered extreme. Killed between 557 and 2,500 people, depending on which report you look at. 1914, World War I. Private Thomas Highgate becomes the first British soldier to be executed for desertion during that war. 1916, in a bid to prove women are capable of serving as military dispatch riders, Augusta and Adeline Van Buren arrive in Los Angeles, completing a 60-day, 5,500-mile cross-country trip on motorcycles, no less. 1921, Margaret Gorman, a 16-year-old, wins the Atlantic City Pageant's Golden Mermaid Trophy. The pageant officials later called her the first Miss America. 1923, Honda Point disaster. 9 U.S. Navy destroyers run aground off the California coast. 7 are lost, 23 sailors killed. 1925, the Rif War. Spanish forces, including troops from the Foreign Legion under Colonel Francisco Franco, landing at Al-Hoceima in Morocco. 1926, Germany is admitted to the League of Nations. That was an exercise in futility. 1933, 3M begins marketing Scotch transparent tape. 1933, Ghazi bin Faisal becomes king of Iraq. 1934, off the New Jersey coast, a fire aboard the passenger liner SS Morro Castle kills 137 people. 1935, U.S. Senator from Louisiana Huey Long is fatally shot in the Louisiana State Capitol building. You're not safe anywhere. 1941, World War II. German forces began the siege of Leningrad on this date. 1943, World War II. The Armistice of Casabile is proclaimed by radio. Ab Sud immediately implements plans to disarm the Italian forces. 1944, World War II. London's hit by a V-2 rocket for the first time. This day, 1945, the Division of Korea begins with the United States troops arrived to partition the southern part of Korea in response to Soviet troops occupying the northern part of the peninsula a month earlier. 1946, the monarchy of Bulgaria is abolished by referendum. 1952, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation makes its first televised broadcast on the second escape of the Boyd Gang. Now, for those that are not familiar with the Boyd Gang, it was a notorious criminal gang based in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, named for one of its members, Edwin Alonzo Boyd. The gang was a favorite of the media at the time because of their sensational actions, which included bank robberies, jailbreaks, relationships with beautiful women, gunfights, manhunts, and daring escapes. Well, okay, where are we at? In 1954, the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, CETO, is established. 1960, in Huntsville, Alabama, President Eisenhower formally dedicates the Marshall Space Flight Center. NASA activated the facility July 1st, but Eisenhower eventually got there. 1962, last run of the famous Pines Express over the Somerset and Dorset Railway in the UK, fittingly using the last steam locomotive built by British Railways, BR Standard Class 9F92220 Evening Star. 1966, the landmark American science fiction television series Star Trek premiered with its first aired episode, The Man Trap. I got to meet the son of the creator. Nice guy. 1970, Trans International. I also met all the crew. In fact, I was at the last event Scotty was at. I gave him a figurine of him that he didn't have. It was very limited edition. I just gave it to him. He came over and took everything I had that was Star Trek, autographed it, and something he never did. Very nice of him. 1970, Trans International Airlines Flight 863 crashes during takeoff from John F. Kennedy International Airport, New York City. All 11 on board were killed. 1971, in Washington, D.C., the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts is inaugurated, with the opening feature being the premiere of Leonard Bernstein's Mass. 1974, Watergate scandal. President Gerald Ford signs the pardon of Richard Nixon for any crimes Nixon may have committed while in office. Now, that was a sweet deal. He gave Ford a job that he couldn't have had otherwise, and Ford pardoned him for any potential crimes. You gotta say, that's a heck of a job. Alrighty, where are we at? 1975, gays in the military. Air Force Tech Sergeant Leonard Matovich, decorated veteran of the Vietnam War, appears in his Air Force uniform on the cover of Time magazine with the headline, "I'm a homosexual." He was immediately given a general discharge, which of course was later upgraded to honorable. 1978, Black Friday. A massacre by soldiers against protesters in Tehran results in 88 deaths. It marks the beginning of the end for the monarchy in Iran. 1986, Nicholas Danilov, a correspondent for U.S. News and World Reports, indicted on charges of espionage by the Soviet Union. 1988, Yellowstone National Park is closed for the first time in history due to ongoing fires. 1989, Partner Flight 394 dives into the North Sea, killing 55 people. Investigation later showed the tail of the plane vibrated loose in flight due to substandard connecting bolts that had been fraudulently sold as aircraft grade. 1994, U.S. Air Flight 427 on approach to Pittsburgh International Airport suddenly crashes in clear weather, killing all 132 people on board. That resulted in the most extensive aviation investigation in history, and it altered the manufacturing practices in the aircraft industry. 2004, NASA's unmanned spacecraft Genesis crash lands when its parachute fails to open. It was a sample return probe that collected a sample of solar wind particles and brought them back to Earth for analysis. It was the first NASA sample return mission to return material since the Apollo program, and first to return material from beyond the orbit of the moon. Well, unfortunately, due to the design flaw, the parachute did not open, and it crashed. A lot of money went up. 2005, Ilyushin 276 aircraft from Emmercom land at a disaster aid staging area at Little Rock Air Force Base. First time Russia has flown such a mission in North America. 2016, NASA launches OSIRIS-REx, its first asteroid sample return mission. The probe will visit 101955 Bennu and is expected to return with samples in 2023. 2017, Syrian Civil War. The Syrian Democratic Forces announced the beginning of the Deir ez-Zor campaign with the stated aim of eliminating the Islamic State of Iraq and Levant from all areas north and east of the Euphrates. Unfortunately, I think they may be anticipating something they're just not big enough to do. Christian Feast Day. Adrian and Natalia of Nicodemia in the Roman Catholic Church. Corbinian. Disabod, Nativity of Mary in the Roman Catholic Church and the Anglo-Catholicism. Monte Fest in the Mangalorean Catholic Church. Our Lady of Charity, Our Lady of Covadonga, Our Lady of Good Health of Vallecana, Pope Sergius I. Feast Day of Our Lady of Maritzel, National Holiday in Andorra. Earliest day on which Auditor's Day can fall, September 14th is the latest. It's usually celebrated on the second Sunday in September in the Scientology Church. Earliest day on which Grandparents' Day can fall, September 14th is the latest, celebrated on the second Sunday in September in Estonia. Earliest day on which Mid-Autumn Festival can fall, October 8th is the latest, celebrated on the 15th day in the 8th month of Chinese calendar. That's in China and the Chinese diaspora. Earliest day on which Turkmen Bakashi Day can fall, September 14th is the latest, celebrated on the second Sunday in September in Turkmenistan. day of the Battle of Borodino in Russia. Feast of Azot, first day of the 10th month of the Bahia calendar and the Bahia faith. Independence Day celebrates independence of Macedonia from Yugoslavia in 1991. International Literacy Day, internationally. Martyrs Day in Afghanistan. National Day, also the Feast of Our Lady of Maritzel in Andorra. Victory Day in Pakistan. Victory Day, also the Feast of Our Lady Victories in Malta. And World Physical Therapy Day. Well, I think that's pretty much has it. The Yep, I think that's got it. We've been talking in the last few shows about the secret underground bases, and this is our third show. Now, we started asking in the last show, why all the secrecy and clandestine underground and underwater activity? If we've got $121 trillion going into these projects of taxpayer money, at least we have the right to know what it is they're doing. So some of the suggestions have been the fact that Armageddon is coming, or maybe the apocalypse. Do the powers that be in the military-industrial complex know something the rest of us don't? Are we like lemons unwittingly flocking toward a sheer precipice whose existence we don't even know exists? Maybe this is one of the reasons for massive underground bases and secret tunnels. Maybe something big is going to happen. Now, from all the research I've done, I've not got a direct answer. None of the so-called powers that be that I've asked can say definitively what is going on. Among the suggestions, potential nuclear war, change in physics of rotation of the Earth, such as a pole shift, which has happened before, reversal of Earth's magnetic field, how about a possible galactic dust cloud that kills everyone on the surface, or brings on a zombie apocalypse? Asteroid or comet strikes. We got an asteroid coming right at us right now. Massive sudden climate change. You got all the climate preachers, led by His Lordship Kerry, saying that climate change is going to kill us all, while he flies around in his private jet. Social, political, and economic chaos resulting from anything. We see a lot of that going on right now. In other words, very dramatic events might be just around the corner, and we don't know about it. It seems those in the know are making massive, extremely expensive preparations for some kind of event. Now, maybe the most interesting aspect of all the stories is that most of them are recounted directly by whistleblowers who allegedly work for the military-industrial complex. So why would this be the case? Could be because people who are involved in the activities of the U.S. military see something that bothers them. Or maybe they're asked to carry out duties that really go against the grain. And some of these people leak information to outside individuals in hopes that some of what they've seen or have been asked to do will become known by the general public. You know, it may be technically possible to design, build, and deploy continent-busting weaponry that far exceeds the destructive power of nuclear weapons. But you got to ask yourself, why would anybody want to destroy the very planet we depend on for survival? Is it militarily advisable to do something like that? And under what conceivable set of circumstances would a military command structure unleash what amounts to hell on Earth so that entire continents or regions of continents were already delaced? Do some people want to win that badly? That may explain what happened to Atlantis. I mean, what sane person or group of people would set in motion such a series of events? And what sane person would want to inhabit a planet been reduced to a smoldering radioactive cinder? Would that be considered a victory? Now, if the underground and underwater infrastructure of secret bases and tunnels has grown so extensively, become so sophisticated, so out of the oversight of the constitutionally mandated political checks by civil government, it may be the well-being of the American people, and maybe many others as well, is threatened by a stealthy, massively funded, high-tech, underground, or undersea power about which they know nothing. I mean, if I had to guess, I'd surmise that more than a few of the folks that have been slowly releasing information have concerns that run along those very lines. They see a lot of things they don't approve of, but they're prohibited by regular security clearances from revealing the information. I mean, if you saw something that you totally disagreed with, in spite of security regulations, would you reveal what you saw, even though you're risking prison or being fined, or maybe even shot for treason? Or, even worse, targeted for liquidation. You might just quietly and anonymously leak information to an investigative reporter, so maybe he would write about it. Well, one of the places that you might guess has a number of secret tunnels is Washington, D.C. Now, from the very beginning of my research, which started back in the 70s, it seemed to me there had to be secret tunnels beneath Washington, D.C. Now, I'd been on the metro system, which runs in tunnels that lie underground in Washington and neighboring counties in the nearby suburban areas of Maryland and Virginia. I mean, that tunnel system is very sophisticated. But there's always been the nagging idea there had to be something more beneath Washington than just the metro system. More tunnels, more secret, deeper underground facilities. I mean, to see that the federal government's in Washington and the surrounding areas of Maryland and Virginia, wouldn't it make sense to have multiple levels of security? Deeply buried protection well away from the prying eyes and ears and beyond the electronic probing of spy satellites and the potential destructive blast of nuclear strikes in the event of a nuclear war? Well, documentation that's come to light about underground facilities in the Mid-Atlantic region, including Washington, makes it appear that it would make sense to have a secret tunnel system connecting these sensitive installations with each other. And a lot of research has confirmed that construction of a regional or national secret tunnel system is definitely feasible. Now, to be sure, the idea of a deeply buried tunnel underlying a major city is nothing new. I've talked to a number of people across the country who assure me there are secret tunnels in their area, even near El Paso. If you know how to do it, you can go from downtown El Paso 40 miles out to Horizon City without coming above ground. A number of cities and towns, large and small, over the world have all kinds of tunnels running beneath them. If you've ever traveled on the tube deep under London or taken a ride on the New York City subway, you realize that all major cities have many miles of underground tunnels that crisscross the landscape. Besides metro tunnels, as in Paris, London, New York, and Washington, D.C., there are highway tunnels, passenger train and freight tunnels, sewers, aqueducts, steam tunnels, conduits for electrical and fiber optic cables, tunnels for pedestrians, and a whole lot. I mean, the laundry list just goes on and on. If you look at a cutaway sketch of Piccadilly Circus in London, as it appeared at in the early 20th century, it reveals a large number of tunnels used for numerous purposes. There are four train tunnels buried beneath Piccadilly Circus, several large escalators and staircases, multiple pedestrian passageways, a booking hall, a machinery floor, shops and vendor stalls, space to simultaneously accommodate many hundreds of people at the same time in transit. And the entire warren of booking halls, tunnels, and passages beneath Piccadilly Circus was excavated through one 18-foot diameter shaft. So the things that our engineering firms are able to do, it's just mind-boggling. Even more intriguing example of a subterranean labyrinth is the so-called Williamson Tunnel, lies beneath Liverpool in England. Joseph Williamson, a wealthy merchant philanthropist in early 19th century Liverpool, kept large gangs of men numbering in the thousands busy over a period of about 35 years tunneling beneath Liverpool's Edge Hill district. They dug one tunnel after another. In fact, no one really knows the extent of this tunnel labyrinth, but it seems to extend for miles, perhaps with tunnels that reach even as deep as the center of Liverpool. In any event, the work stopped when Williamson died in 1840, and the tunnels have been largely abandoned since that time. Now, this is an interesting example because it shows one wealthy man employing gangs of laborers using just pick-and-shovel technology could create a subterranean labyrinth of considerable extent under a major metropolitan area, and nobody would know about it. Imagine how much more today's technology could accomplish using modern technology and backed by the power of major corporations or government agencies. Well, there's another interesting example that was pointed out to me by a friend of mine who lived up in, he was in Burlington when he talked to me, but he's moved west. Compared to few people know outside of Detroit, that there's a huge salt mine with 50 miles of roads tunneling through the subterranean depths more than 1,100 feet below Detroit, Michigan. Now, the salt mining there began in 1896 when an 1,100-foot shaft was sunk. Mining continued until 1983 when market forces brought operations to a halt. But in recent years, it's been reported the mine's been reopened. How many people who visit Detroit are aware that more than 1,000 feet below their feet, huge 40-ton trucks with 7-foot diameter wheels rolled through 50 miles of roads carved out of solid rock salt? Now, you can't tell me that there's not a lot of, unexpected activity going on there. Now, there are so many examples of major cities with unusual subterranean levels that the list just goes on and on. How about Subtropolis in Kansas City, Missouri? There are thick beds of limestone in the Kansas City area that have been extensively mined out in the years past. These miles of mined-out tunnels and caverns are owned by Lamar Hunt and his family. They've been turned into the world's largest underground business complex. It's called Hunt Midwest Subtropolis. Houses more than 50 businesses, including warehouses, cold storage, light manufacturing, and office space. Considered a foreign trade zone, the Subtropolis has 4.3 million square feet of building space, more than 20 million square feet of developed space. More than 1,300 people work underground in the Subtropolis at any time. Its miles of brightly lit roadways accommodate cars and large over-the-road tractor-trailer trucks. Now ask yourself this, how many visitors to the Kansas City area suspect the presence of miles of underground, brightly lit streets, and subterranean business, light industrial, foreign trade zone beneath their feet? Now, as much as I had researched, I never came across that until not too long ago. And then there's the curious case of Shun Akaba's research in Tokyo, Japan. Shun Akaba is a former broadcast journalist who worked as a TV reporter. His specialty was covering international conflicts for Asahi TV. Well, in 1996, he left his job and became a freelance writer. But he took an unexpected turn and when he stumbled across information that suggested it was an extensive system of unknown train tunnels that had been secretly built beneath Tokyo. As he examined construction records and tunnel maps, both old and new, he came to the startling realization there were many tunnels, unexplained underground spaces, levels that could not be accounted for by official records. He thinks there may be 2,000 kilometers of tunnels below Tokyo, far more than 250 kilometers of publicly known subway tunnels. Why would they need to build all this? Shun Akiba has compiled his findings and conclusions in a booklet he called Imperial City Tokyo, Secrets of a Hidden Underground Network. Now, notwithstanding the dramatic import of his research, the news media, of course, have ignored his findings, and his work suffers from relative obscurity. I tried to find a copy of his book, and I couldn't do it. Interestingly enough, the book has gone into 5 editions, but it's not available in English, as far as I can find out. Now, there are more and more examples that could be pointed out, but you get the idea. A lot of cities, including major world capitals, have all sorts of subterranean levels that crisscross the depths below the city streets. Some case secretly, like Tokyo, and some case very deep underground, is the case of the Detroit salt mine tunnels. And of course, Washington, D.C. is no exception. Now, millions of people have lived, worked, and traveled in Washington. They've ridden the metro. Crowds of tourists and workers and school students and others ride the trains beneath the nation's capital every single day. It's an extremely well-run system and operates relatively smoothly. But it's important to realize the metro system is not the beginning and it's not the end of underground tunnels in the Washington, D.C. area. Planning for the tunnels began in the 50s, although construction didn't get going until 1969, and it continued for about 30 years until the system was finally completed, at least the publicly admitted to system. But the serious tunneling under Washington had begun long before that. Even in the 60s, when the metro planning and construction was getting geared up, there were other plans for other underground work, much more secret, much deeper. Now, quite often, when you write books, as I do, or you do a show like I do, one of the things that happens is you get all kinds of information sent to you. Letters, emails, and sometimes the things they say are range from bizarre to, well, let's say highly interesting. I know an author who got an email in 2004 from a source who said it was claimed to be a federal employee in Washington. He said, according to his experience, there's a huge Metro Rail underground complex in one of the Metro Rail stations in the city. There's a door a little ways down a tunnel that leads to an intermediate terrace where another door will provide access to either a ladder or an elevator that will take people to the underground tunnels that connect the White House with other places that get used in time of war when a shadow government needs to operate. Well, sometimes they give you just enough to get interested. The question is whether the author of that email, who is alleging a secret underground tunnel beneath Washington, is telling the truth. Well, if you've ever been wandering through those tunnels, you know that in all likelihood he's probably telling you the truth. Now, there was a booklet that was brought to my attention by a friend of mine. He didn't let me have it, but he showed it to me on Skype. It's called Hogs in the Tunnel. Now, a number of folks at the X Conference in Bethesda in April of 2004 made mention of that booklet. The most peculiar thing about it, it was written by a Washington, D.C. journalist named John Elvin. It's a byproduct of his personal curiosity about the nether realms below Washington, D.C. and his wealth of insider information that he accumulated from years of reporting for the Washington Times, in his Inside the Beltway investigative column, and for his muckraking newsletter, Political Dynamite. Basically, he revealed there's a literal warren of tunnels beneath Washington, D.C. The phrase he used for the title, Hogs in the Tunnel, refers to the purported cry that Secret Service detail had for Bill and Hillary Clinton that they had to allegedly holler whenever the Clintons decided to secretly step out on the town through the tunnel network that radiates out from the lower levels below the White House. Well, as it happens, the Clintons were from Arkansas, and of course, the mascot of the University of Arkansas where Clinton formerly chased co-eds and taught law before becoming governor of Arkansas as a Razorback Hog. According to Elvin, his research and insider sources reveal that beneath Washington is a serpentine network of secret underground passages that looks like miles and miles of huge intestines. He dates the beginning of the secret tunnel system below D.C. to the very early days of the Republic when a British attack was feared. And as events in the early 19th century showed, that was a very good guess. One of the early tunnels ran from a secret stairway in the Octagon House at 18th and New York Avenue and ended with behind a brick fireplace at the White House at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And there was a side tunnel that branched off to the Potomac River for use as an emergency escape. Now, other reported tunnels ran from the State Department to the White House and stretched the length of Pennsylvania Avenue. And some of these tunnels are said to be impressively large, able to accommodate vehicular traffic. According to Elvin, the Georgetown, the exclusive upscale residential district on the west side of Washington, D.C., is a beehive of tunnels. And he talks about the tunnels beneath the Capitol and its environs, as well as the networks had to radiate out from beneath the Treasury building, and thousands of miles of other tunnels of every description, some well lit and some not so well lit, monitored by security patrols 24/7. He also talks about the elaborate presidential facility buried deep beneath the White House and to the large tunnel that runs the length of Pennsylvania Avenue, and this discusses whether or not the White House might not be actually some sort of Potemkin village, an elaborate false facade to conceal the fact the president and his family actually reside elsewhere, maybe coming and going from the White House through the many secret underground tunnels that lie underneath the city of Washington, D.C. And certainly President Biden needs it for his... I mean, you can only go on so many vacations, so if he's got a, shall we say, a Potemkin village, he can vacation right there without leaving home. I guess you'd call that a staycation. Well, one of the most intriguing stories I've heard is that there's a huge pneumatic tube that can shoot cargo or a person in a pellet right down the middle of the access road to Dulles Airport, which is in Virginia. John Elvin said he talked to one of the men that worked on that tunnel and says he has no reason to disbelieve him. The tunnel purportedly begins at the Pentagon. Now, this is an interesting story because for the last several years, there's been bits and pieces of information floating around that hint that a secret tunnel system radiates outward from Washington, D.C. to other areas in the Mid-Atlantic region. Now, this information that Elvin came up with lends credence to this scenario. And the federal government mounted a serious research effort in designing and building deep underground pneumatic tunnels as a transport system back in the 60s and 70s. So if such an underground pneumatic tube system was really being built through the black budget, it was probably for the use of the federal alphabet soup agencies. That would certainly make sense. Now, the idea of a secret Washington, D.C. tunnel for bigwig politicians or other clandestine purposes may seem just a bit far-fetched, but consider, if you will, September 2003, when President George W. Bush spent a couple of days at the posh Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. You know, a special train was kept idling underground beneath the hotel for his use as an escape in case of an emergency. There was an abandoned platform underneath that hotel known as Track 61. The president would have access to it through an underground passage from inside the Landmark Hotel and by a freight elevator that descends from a brass sheath door next to the hotel's parking garage. I've heard stories that that particular abandoned platform was actually built for one of the famous wealthy families. And in fact, the whole thing was just basically put under wraps when they quit using the Waldorf. Now, if this much is admitted in the newspaper and on the internet, it's conceivable there's a whole lot more secret options in play here. Maybe this level of security is itself a screen for a still more secure and even more secret escape option. There's also the possibility Manhattan could well have secret tunnels that the public knows nothing about. And I can assure you that it does, because when I lived there, I made research into the underground New York. One point in time, you went behind the picture of Christ in the main library, and there was a series of stairs and passageways that led you down to three levels below the city. So if the president's prepared to use a secret tunnel beneath the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City, why not in Washington, D.C. as well? Now, there's another example of a clandestine tunnel beneath Washington. It came to light in 2001 in connection with the Robert Hansen spy scandal. Hansen, if you remember, was the FBI counter-espionage agent who was arrested in jail for spying for the Russians. News reports in March of 2001 revealed that he had evidently tipped off the Soviets during the 80s, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and the NSA, secretly dug a surveillance tunnel beneath the Soviet embassy in Washington, D.C. Supposedly, they spent several hundred million dollars of taxpayer money building that surveillance tunnel. When asked about that clandestine project on CBS News Face the Nation, Vice President Dick "I'm King" Cheney said if it were true such a tunnel were dug, I couldn't talk about it anyway. And that was a very interesting response by the former vice president. You know, just a little over a year after giving that evasive response to CBS News about the secret tunnel under Russian embassy, Cheney's neighbors began to complain about a construction project at the vice president's residence that created repeated huge blasts that were rocking the neighborhood. And the explosions came from inside the vice president's house. Now, you have to remember, the vice president lives in a mansion on the grounds of the U.S. Naval Observatory in Northwest Washington, just off Massachusetts Avenue, and that location surrounded by expensive homes in a wealthy section of town. So you can imagine what the concern was by residents of the neighborhood when they began to hear loud explosions two or three times a day. Not only early in the morning, but sometimes late at night. Now, when the neighbors complained about that continual blasting, the Naval Observatory Superintendent, David Gilliard, sent out a letter which said, due to sensitive nature and support of national security and homeland defense, project specification is classified and can't be released. In addition, please understand we're severely constrained by operation requirements to perform this project on a highly accelerated basis. So what was so important that they had to literally disturb the entire neighborhood? He went on to say the blasting would last for another 8 months, and the Navy had tried to create less noise on the construction project by silencing backup alerts on trucks and removing most diesel-powered electric generators from the construction site. A naval spokeswoman further characterized the work as infrastructure and utility upgrades. Local residents believe the work may have involved underground excavation or tunneling. And in all likelihood, that's probably true. Now, to give you an idea, have you ever tried setting off high explosives inside your house? Especially in these uncertain times? For most people, that sort of activity would probably earn a swift trip to a prison cell, but not for the Vice President of the United States, whose house needs hundreds of explosives blasted over a period of many months. Now, any thinking person can plainly see while all this blasting was going on, the Vice President must certainly have been somewhere else. Maybe he was down in that labyrinth of tunnels that underlies Washington, D.C., which presumably Cheney, who was described as a consummate insider, would already have known about the tunnels and more likely than not would regularly use those tunnels. But the highly unusual level of heavy construction activity at the Vice President's mansion clearly indicates a very serious kind of undertaking. Maybe going deeper or wider. You have to think back in 1996, Dick Cheney, who was not an engineer, got the Golden Eagle Award from the Academy of Fellows of the Society of American Military Engineers. Now, two Golden Eagle Awards are given every year to engineers who made singularly distinctive contributions to the profession of military engineering and to America's defense establishment. Now, Cheney shared that award with the chairman emeritus of the Board of Parsons, maybe the premier underground construction and tunneling company in the U.S. Interesting thing about this engineering honors him while Cheney is a past Secretary of Defense. As I said, he is not and never has been an engineer. His official biography makes it very clear his academic training is in political science, and his adult career has been in the political arena. So did Dick Cheney and the chairman emeritus of the Board of Parsons, named Steve Greenfield, maybe work together on a major clandestine underground project, with Greenfield handling the hard engineering side of the project and Cheney pulling the strings in the back rooms of the black budget world that clandestine movers and shakers navigate to get the big secret things done? Well, there are $3.3 trillion unaccounted for even in the American black budget. That's in addition to the $121 trillion that's missing publicly. Now, Parsons, it's actually Parsons Brinckerhoff, Inc., has popped up in research on underground facilities more than once. And that's not the only thing that's odd. A few years ago, a noteworthy item appeared in the Washington Post. Now, the Post is supposedly the newspaper of record for official Washington, D.C. So the information in that article is about the closest we'll probably ever get to an official announcement of strange goings on down by the Potomac. The title of the article was Navy Keeps a Secret in Plain Sight. The subtitle was Hush Hush Project Underway by Potomac. What it all boiled down to was the U.S. Navy had a secret construction project going on in Washington and wouldn't tell anybody what it was about. However, the fact that it was publicized in the Washington Post gave everybody a clue. And the article did, in fact, reveal some interesting details. The entire mysterious construction site was fenced off down by the Jefferson Memorial on National Park land. Navy spokesman, when questioned, said, as a matter of policy, we can't go into the particulars. And the normal multi-agency review for construction on National Park land was ignored for this project. And officials who were briefed about the project were sworn to secrecy. So much for the public's right to know. Article referred to hangar-like structures, which cover an excavation area. And it said the expected project duration would be 4 years. There was no paper trail that could be found for this security-sensitive project. National Park employees were reportedly told the secret construction was utility work, and the Navy said the work was a utility assessment and upgrade. Acting Secretary of the U.S. Commission of Fine Arts, which has oversight of the Potomac River parkland in question, said it was illegal for him to discuss what was happening. In fact, the Navy began the project without even informing the National Park Service, and the National Park Service actually owns the land. So after 300 days, the digging was still going on. Digging, as in going down. One of the two companies involved was known as Kiewit. And it's a known constructor of underground military facilities. It's also excavated lengthy deep tunnels for a variety of government agencies. So even if the Navy ultimately wrapped up its project in a few years, as it said it would, and left behind nothing more than a small equipment shed and new landscaping, reasonable doubt always remains as to what the Navy has actually done. According to research, a relatively unobtrusive building can serve as an entry point to a major underground work facility. And that building can be anything at all. And if you're going to distract people's attention, the more unusual the better. Of course, these types of questions wouldn't arise at all but for the Navy's high-handed, overweening secrecy and its total disregard for legal procedures. In other words, by its own behavior, the Navy's indicated whatever it did can't possibly be business as usual. The presence of a deep underground tunneling company on the project, along with the references to more than 300 days of digging, inevitably leads to the conclusion whatever happened at the site occurred deep underground. That brings us back to the blasting and heavy construction at Dick Cheney's house in 2002, which was also a hush-hush, super-secret Navy project that nobody would discuss. According to the Navy spokeswoman, if you'll remember, the project at Cheney's house would involve infrastructure and utility upgrades. And that's reminiscent of the project along the Potomac, which the Navy also said involved utility assessment and upgrade. So you have to ask yourself, are these two projects related? Certainly they could be. Two construction sites could conceivably be two phases of the same project, the bulk of which lies underground. Well, a number of years ago, there was a reference on a website involving the Cold War. It had a reference to some declassified materials on a so-called Deep Underground Command Center to be built far below Washington, D.C. This was at the height of the Cold War when everybody knew the Russians were going to attack tomorrow. Well, those documents, the declassified materials in question, were actually to be found at the Lyndon Baines I'm Going to Be King Johnson Presidential Library on the campus of the University of Texas in Austin. Now, these documents have been described to me by a number of folks as revealing and show that already back in the 60s, serious plans are being made at the very highest level of the U.S. government to build a very deep buried command center 3,500 feet beneath Washington, D.C. Now, you have to ask yourself, what would entail the need to go that deep? And how many taxpayer dollars went to build that? Interestingly enough, the first of these high-level documents began in November 63, a couple of weeks before Kennedy was assassinated. Now, there's no definitive tie between the assassination and these documents, but the paper trail shows that right about the time Kennedy was murdered, he was scheduled for a series of briefings on a number of matters to include whether or not to build a deep underground command center. After the assassination, this top secret policy matter passed on to King Johnson, who of course went ahead with it. Well, at this point in time, we've come to the end of today's show. We're going to do one more segment on hidden underground bases, and we'll probably get into some hidden underwater bases as well. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.